Okay, I want to begin by saying something that I hope you will remember all the days of your life. The thing I want to say to you that I hope you will remember all the days of your life comes straight out of this passage. So here it is. No one, anywhere, under any circumstances, is beyond the reach of the gospel. I hope you will remember that as long as you live. No one, anywhere, under any circumstances, is beyond the reach of the gospel. Do you think we can say that together? Let's give it a go. No one, anywhere, under any circumstances, is beyond the reach of the gospel. Amen. Do we believe that? We do. And perhaps there's no better example of this than Saul of Tarsus. He was so far from God, and yet he would go on to become one of the most influential Christians in the whole of Christendom, really, the whole history of Christianity. So far from God. And I just want to kind of trace some of that so that we get an idea of just how far he was from God. So let's do that. So in chapter 6 of the book of Acts, there are allegations made against another disciple called Stephen. And in chapter 7, Stephen finds himself before what is known as the Sanhedrin. That was a group of 70 men, where he's trying to kind of convince them that Jesus is the promised Messiah. And I can imagine that must have been very intimidating. Can you imagine? 70 men. And it's not 70 friends, far from it. And towards the end of his speech to them, he basically points a finger at them and says, actually, you, Sanhedrin, were largely responsible for the death of the Messiah. Well, as you can imagine, that didn't go down too well. In fact, let me read to you just what happens next. So this is in chapter 7. When the members of the Sanhedrin heard this, they were furious and gnashed their teeth at him. I imagine them foaming, frothing at the mouth. But Stephen, full of the Holy Spirit, looked up to heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. Look, he said, I see heaven open and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. At this, they covered their ears and yelling at the top of their voices, they all rushed at him, dragged him out of the city, and began to stone him. Meanwhile, the witnesses laid their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. I can just imagine Saul saying, leave your coats with me, guys. They'll be safe with me. You need your hands free to hurl your stones and your rocks at this blasphemer. This is how far Saul was from God. Chapter 8 begins with these words, and Saul approved of their killing him. It gets a big thumbs up from Saul. Good job. Well done. It's the kind of man he was. And then chapter 8 begins with these words, godly men buried Stephen and mourned deeply for him. But Saul began to destroy the church. Going from house to house, he dragged off men and women and put them in prison. And then chapter 9, verse 1, which we read, begins with these words, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. In the message, it puts it like this. All this time, Saul was breathing down the necks of the master's disciples. You know, they can almost literally feel his breath behind them. So I hope we're getting a sense of just how far removed he was from God. You know, he goes to the high priest and gets letters, basically arrest warrants, takes them to the synagogue, and if anyone who finds anyone who belongs to the way, which was a bit of a nickname for those who were believers, that they were to be taken as prisoners to Jerusalem. You know, Saul is out of control. Totally out of control and so far from God. And maybe something else just to throw into the mix that we need to know about Saul is that he was very, very religious. He calls him elsewhere, refers to himself elsewhere as the Pharisee of the Pharisees. He's kind of top of the tree in Judaism, a religious fanatic. Have you ever met a religious fanatic? Maybe you have. If you have, I guarantee it was not a pleasant experience. You know, we try to avoid people like that, don't we? And of course, no one ever comes to know God through religion. You cannot be saved or come to know God through religion. No matter what that religion is, we're saved through a relationship with Jesus, aren't we? As it says in Acts 4, verse 12, salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. And so all this is stacked up against Saul. You know, if you put it all together, he's angry, he's violent, he's twisted, he's callous, he's a religious fanatic. He is hell-bent on persecuting the church, you know, persecuting innocent men and women, having them dragged off to prison. Why am I laboring this point? Because no one, anywhere, under any circumstances, is beyond the reach of the gospel. I wonder if there are people in your life whom you think, I'm not sure they could ever become a Christian. I can never see it happening. I can't imagine it ever happening. Maybe we can all think of someone like that. Not because they're like Saul, not because they are violent, maybe not even anti-Christian or anti-church, maybe actually the opposite, very respectable. Might even go to church on occasions. You know, maybe have a nice job, drive a nice car, and you take one look at them and you think, I just cannot ever see them becoming a Christian, becoming a follower of Jesus. Can you think of someone like that? It could be a neighbor or a work colleague or a friend, a family member. Well, that's how the Christians would have thought about Saul. They would have thought, there's no way this man is ever going to bow the knee to Jesus. So be encouraged. You know, if God can bring someone like Saul into his kingdom, he can do it for anyone, can't he? So don't give up hope. Don't give up praying. So he falls to the ground. He hears a voice in Aramaic. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And in Acts, I think it's Acts chapter 26, as Paul, when he's now Paul, the apostle, and he's recounting his testimony, and he's standing before King Agrippa, he adds something. He says that Jesus spoke to him in Aramaic, saying, So, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. And that's quite a telling statement. Jesus is saying to Saul, basically, you've been resisting me time and time again. I might be wrong here, but I think my understanding of a goad was used when people were ploughing with an ox, and if it would go off to the right or off to the left, you know, it would get a wee jab with this pointed stick and bring it back, and it would soon learn, you know, if I go this way, so I'll just plough this straight line. And it's like Jesus is saying to Saul, I've been speaking to you many, many times, but you keep resisting me. Well, how has Jesus been speaking to Saul? Some people think, for example, because Saul was similar age to Jesus, he may have heard him teaching or witnessed a miracle. We don't know, of course. Obviously, he was aware of the message that these Christians were bringing about Jesus' death and resurrection. I mean, that was news that would have been everywhere. I'm guessing that Saul just couldn't get Jesus off his mind. What if he has risen from the dead? I also believe that Jesus would have been speaking to Saul at the death of Stephen. We're told, actually, in Acts that his face shone like that of an angel. You know, it stood out. It lit up. Wouldn't that have challenged Saul, the persecutor? What about the men and women he dragged off to prison? What had they done to deserve this? Maybe they went quietly. Maybe they didn't resist. Maybe they didn't shout and scream and swear. And maybe that also would have spoken to Saul. See, God's been speaking to him in many, many ways, but he's kept resisting. And maybe there are people that we think, could they ever become a Christian? And yet, who knows, maybe God's speaking to them in lots of different ways that we are not aware of. You know, something that you've maybe said or done or offered or different ways God's speaking to them. Outwardly, it might not feel that way to you. Outwardly, their world is perfect. See, outwardly, Saul was so far from God, but inwardly, there was a different story going on. So don't give up hope. Keep praying. Because no one anywhere under any circumstances is beyond the reach of the gospel. So please don't forget that. The second point I'd like to share with you is quite similar. No one anywhere under any circumstances is too lost for God to find them. Again, I think it comes out of this chapter. So verse 3, let's try and tease it out. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. You know, that's how it happened. Suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. So here is this highly educated young man who thinks he's doing God's will, but is actually thoroughly self-righteous, and suddenly he meets the risen Jesus. And that's how it is for many people. Suddenly, you know, suddenly a crisis comes out of the blue, and suddenly, you know, things change. God speaks powerfully. That's how it was, for example, the prodigal son. You know, so far from home, broken his father's heart, and then suddenly he comes to his senses through crisis. That's how it was for me as a teenager. You know, just lost in this world, hearing the gospel for the very first time, and suddenly a light dawned, a penny dropped, my life was changed. No one anywhere under any circumstances is too lost for God to find them. Try to picture Saul for a moment. Here he is, breathing out murderous threats. This is a man on a mission to destroy this fledgling church. He's on his way to get arrest warrants. Suddenly, a light flashes from heaven, and a voice comes and speaks to him. And he falls to the ground. Now, here is this tough, angry, violent young man, a religious firebrand, and he's spread-eagled on the ground. And he hears a voice speaking to him. Now, this is the number one enemy of the church, holding the coats of those who are stoning a young believer, breathing out murderous threats. Now, what is Jesus going to say to him? What would you expect? You know, checkmate. Got you. It's all over. Or time to meet your maker. That would be a good one, wouldn't it? What does Jesus say? Saul, Saul. I wonder if you can just kind of feel the gentleness in those words, the kindness, the love, the grace. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Of course, when you persecute believers, we are persecuting Jesus. He feels our pain. Of course, the converse of that is also truth. So, for example, in Matthew 25, Jesus says, if you give a cup of cold water to somebody who's thirsty, you actually do that to me when you do it in my name. Or you give clothes to somebody who doesn't have any. Or you visit the sick or those in prison. If you do that in my name, actually you're doing it, you're doing that to me. See, Saul was receiving mercy. It should have been, yeah, it's time to meet your maker, or it's checkmate, or, you know, punishment for you, Saul. It's, you know, for what you're doing. But no, he received mercy. And he would never, ever forget that. He would never forget. That would become his life message, really, that God is merciful. God is kind. Because he knew only too well what he was like, what he had done. But he received mercy. So no one anywhere under any circumstances is too lost for God to find him. And one final point, no one anywhere under any circumstances is too strong that they don't need people around them. And again, this comes out of this story, this passage in Acts 9. So let's just think for a few moments of the people who were around Saul, who are kind of part of this this story. So verse 8, we're told, Saul got up from the ground. When he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. So here's this tough, angry man. And without the help of others, he cannot really put one foot in front of the other. He has to be led by the hand. He's now dependent on other people. Presumably those were his companions on the roadside. But he needed their assistance, didn't he? Then verse 10. In Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision, Ananias. Yes, Lord, he says. Wouldn't it be great if we all just responded to God? God speaks, yes, Lord, I'm here. What do you want? Well, the Lord told him, go to the house of Judas on Straight Street. Yeah, I know that street. Know it well, actually. And ask for a man from Tarsus. Oh, Tarsus, that big city, Tarsus. Isn't that where Jonah preached? And wow, what? Wow, this sounds an interesting assignment. And there's a man named Saul, for he is praying. Oh, dear. Did I hear you right? You didn't really say Saul, did you? And so we're introduced to Ananias. And he goes. I can imagine that was a big risk for him to go. I would imagine it would have taken a lot of courage. I'm not sure if you would have went or I would have went. This is the number one enemy of the church. He's had people taken to prison. He's breathing out murderous threats. But he goes, and what does he say as he meets Saul the persecutor? Verse 17, brother Saul. Wow, really? Brother Saul? Remarkable, isn't it? It's welcome. That's a big hug. That's, wow, you're part of our family. You're one of, oh, wow, really? Because the Lord has spoken to Ananias in a vision. And then we're told in verse 18 that Saul spent several days with the disciples in Damascus. Wouldn't you just love to be a fly on the wall during those times? I would imagine it's just a time of sharing stories. How did you meet Jesus? Oh, I was a fisherman. What about you? Well, my life was just a mess. I was into prostitution. It wasn't my choice. Oh, I was a tax collector. Really? And it's just stories, isn't it? What Jesus has done. And that kind of, we're in this together, we're family. No matter who we are, where we've come from, what we've done, what our past is, in Jesus, as we sung, we are one, family. And perhaps just a point to draw out from that is we all have a role to play. You know, whether it's those who are leading him by the hand, whether it was responding like Ananias, whether it was just the other disciples, sharing stories, just recognizing that we are family together. None of us is too strong that we live the Christian life on our own. We do it my way. We do, you know, we need each other, don't we? And we all have a part to play, even if you feel it's very insignificant. Whether it's serving tea or coffee or giving a welcome at the door, and yeah, these are big things. Sometimes we think they're very small things. Whatever it is, you know, don't be a spectator in the church. Be a participant. Play the part that God wants you to play. And then together we grow, don't we, as his family. Well, may God bless his word to us. And so let me just say, yeah, maybe in closing, just give you those three statements that I hope you'll not forget. So first of all, no one anywhere under any circumstances, and that really is under any circumstances, is too lost for God to find them. And no one anywhere under any circumstances is too far for the gospel to come and reach them. And no one anywhere under any circumstances is too strong that we don't need other people around us. We need each other. Okay, well, you've listened to me for quite a long time, I think. We are going to sing, in closing, a lovely hymn, which is Amazing Grace.